Scott, how you doing?
Real good, Richard. Happy Sunday to you, and happy last Sunday of the year before all the other Sundays there'll be baseball players on the field.
That's right. Right up until November, we will have baseball players on the field. Not necessarily playing games, but on the field. Scott, a lot of talk.
Ours is to believe that's only a couple weeks away. I think the games start around February 23rd, 24th. So, you know, like 2 weeks we'll have games. That doesn't seem real.
Yeah, and the real games start in late March again this year. So, you know, we'll have real baseball coming up. And now we have the Yankees-Red Sox playing in London. There's a story that the Mets are going to be playing in London next year. So what I'm trying to figure out what the idea is here, because obviously you're not going to have a franchise in London anytime soon. Is this just for merchandise to put your toe in the water? What's going on with the teams playing in London, or just the novelty of it?
Yeah, it's you know, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. It's the merchandising. It's trying to become a world sport. I mean, you know, like the NBA merchant, that's so big. You know, you see, you know, LeBron James merchant jerseys and whatever else all over the world. And, you know, sports leagues are doing this, what the NFL's done, you know, by playing in London. So, yeah, baseball, you know, it's also kind of what the World Baseball Classic that MLB conducts every three or four springs. You know, it's kind of tied with that, too. Once baseball was kicked out of the Olympics, MLB just views it is very, very important to continue to make sure that they're in all these different countries. Some of it, obvious countries, you know, like the Latin American countries and such, they get players from. But beyond that, you know, England and Italy and China, if you can sell a bunch of merchandise at some, you know, over there, then that all contributes to how and why that baseball, most recent, you know, last couple of years, the revenue streams are more than $10 billion. And that's part of how you reach a figure that high, is by looking beyond our shores of the United States.
And you know what, Scott, that's interesting, because revenue is not tied to attendance anymore. You know, attendance was down 4% last year. It's been down the last 3 years. And they're looking to other revenue streams, as you talk about, overseas and television and merchandising and all of that. And, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, the games take too long. Got to pick up the pace of play. What I never hear is, you know, why attendance in the park is down. It costs so damn much to go to games now. It used to be you could take a family of four for $100, sit in really good seats, have a hot dog or two, and enjoy a game. Now, you know, for a good seat, it could cost you for a family of four like $1,000 to go to a game.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you're right. That's the great myth, Richard, I think, about attendance. You know, I mean, some fans will get angry at times, you know, as the ticket prices go up, and they'll say, you know, like, look, this winter we're in right now, like, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado still haven't signed. So you might have fans, certain fans, you know, just let's pick the Chicago White Sox, because we know that they've tried to sign Manny Machado. You might have some fans in Chicago saying, that guy's overpaid, you know, it's ridiculous, you know, I don't want, you know, why should might White Sox sign him for $200+ million? You know, it's just going to mean the tickets are going to go up. Well, I have news for those fans. The tickets eventually are going to go up anyway, but they aren't contingent on whether your team signs Manny Machado. The thing that so many fans don't understand is the revenue comes into this game, especially the TV money. You know, the national contract with Fox and ESPN and TBS, and then all these regional contracts. You know, so many teams have their own regional sports networks, you know, like the Yankees with YES. Those are mostly what pay the players. Then you get into other things like the merchandising, the jersey sales, and the rights fees, because you might, anytime you go to a movie, if you see a guy wearing like a Yankees cap, well, MLB gets rights fees. You know, that's why a lot of times when you see players in advertisements that aren't tied with the team, they may be wearing a generic cap, and that's so that, you know, they no rights fees have to exchange. So, yeah, there are so many different revenue streams today, and yeah, some fans may think, well, the tickets are so high because the players are making gobs of money. Well, that's not the case. The tickets are high for other reasons. All these brand new ballparks that have come into the game in the last two decades, you know, they cost money to maintain and to upkeep and to make sure they're sparkling clean and still like new 10 years later. I mean, there's all kinds of different, you know, costs that people don't realize.
Sure. Well, Scott, you know, there's been a lot of talk about changes, and some of them are changes that might happen in a year, 2 years. What do you think will happen this year? I mean, do you think we're going to see a pitch clock in Major League Baseball this year?
Yeah, that's the one I do foresee. I think that, you know, I predict, you know, nobody knows for sure, but I think we'll see a pitch clock. A lot of the other stuff that started to leak this past week, I don't anticipate anything major this year. I mean, they're not going to all of a sudden wait until the end of winter and say, hey, the National League's having a DH this year. I mean, that'd be ridiculous. You have to give the National League teams notice at the start of the winter so that as they build their team, you know, in December, November, December, January, they could plan to have a DH. So I think a lot of this is stuff that was leaked so it would be floated to gauge public reaction. And in other words, hey, you know, we're going to leak that, you know, hey, we're looking at having a DH in the National League. And then, you know, then the Commissioner Rob Manfred and the suits in New York kind of can sit back and watch what public reaction is going to be to that. And, you know, if there's total outrage, then that may delay the DH in the National League for a couple more years. But, you know, we've heard for so many years now that it might be coming. So if they float it now and you know, the reaction seems tepid, then I think we'll see a DH maybe as early as a year from now in the National League. But I think it's too quick to move this year. Now, you know, the other among the proposed changes, another intriguing one is the idea that a relief pitcher would have to face three batters. And, you know, you would get away from go to the mound, call in a reliever. He faces one batter, then go to the mound, call another reliever. That I'm thinking also it was probably at least a year away. That, to me, is a trial balloon, and it's awful quick to, like, float that idea. And then within a month, which is what they'd have to do, because, as you said, opening day this year is March 28th. I just don't see how you propose a radical idea like that. And then a month later, the season starts, and it's implemented. So I think we're going to see a pitch clock, these other changes. I think we may see eventually and maybe in the near future, but not this year.
Yeah, I would agree with you, because you do need teams to be able to adjust to that. For example, if you signed a lefty who just gets lefties out, and then all of a sudden, well, you know, he's going to have to get righties out too, he may not be as attractive. So I do think that is going to change. Now, you know, I talked to Bill Madden yesterday, Hall of Fame baseball writer, and said, when do you think Machado and Harper are going to get signed? I mean, there's a week before regular players, and as you say, maybe 10 days to a week before games start. And Bill seemed to think that games might even start before those guys are signed. What are you thinking?
You know, I would not disagree with Bill on that. I think there's every chance. I mean, you know, if they're going to sign before and be in camp before games start, I mean, both Machado and Harper are going to have to – this whole thing's going to have to be figured out in the next 7 or 8 days. Maybe for one of them it will be, but, you know, we saw last year taking – you know, because you learn from history, right? And Scott Boras, who represents Bryce Harper, last year he had J.D. Martinez, and Martinez was late in the Boston's camp. I know he didn't he was not ready to play in games when they started. He started playing games a little late. I'm trying to remember. I haven't looked up the date, but I believe J.D. Martinez signed just around the, either right around the time games were starting or maybe a couple days after. But it was right up against that deadline. And same, Eric Hosmer in San Diego as well. I think he signed on the eve of position players reporting. And Eric Hosmer also is a Scott Boras client. So we saw Hosmer and J.D. Martinez sign after spring training started last year. And neither one of them, J.D. was expected to get almost $200 million, and he only got a little only, as I say, only a little over $100 million. But neither one of those guys were like Bryce Harper. I mean, with Bryce Harper, you know, that's like this generation's Alex Rodriguez, in whereby Scott Boras is looking at a record-setting, precedent-setting contract. So, I agree with Bill. It could be into when games start with this spring before they're signed.
And I'm on the record saying I don't think he's going to get better than the 10-year, $300 million deal that Lerner offered him down in Washington. I just think that teams now are determined not to give guys 10-year deals, might be 6 or 7 at most, and the money is going to be, you know, the money. It's going to be 30, 35, maybe tops. You know, I know Boras was talking about $400 million at one point. I think that's no way.
Yeah, there's no way he comes close to the $400 million. So you're right, 2 years ago, that was the big rage of speculation was, oh, man, you know, Harper's going to command a $400 million deal. And now that we're into his free agency, there's no way he's going to do that. I think the Nationals, they pulled that offer off the table. But I think, you know, the ownership in Washington really, really loves Bryce Harper, and they view him as a franchise player. I think if Harper isn't, if there's not that $350 million deal out there, I still think the Nationals will be in play and Harper could go back to them and they'll resurrect that 10-year, $300 million. Beyond, it's hard to see him getting more than that. I mean, the Phillies, for example, you hear, and I know they said early in the winter, we've got stupid money to spend. I still think they come away with Harper or Machado, but if Harper was going to say the Phillies were going to give Harper 10 years and $350 million, well, why drag it out this close to spring training or into spring training? If they were prepared to do that, the Phillies could have just done it 2 months ago, and then they could have had 2 months to talk to their season ticket holders and promote Bryce Harper in the Philadelphia market and try to sell corporate sponsorships. I don't know why, like I say, I don't anticipate that they're going to come up with that kind of money, because if they are, why didn't they just do it 2 months ago and get the head start on the season and the marketing opportunity? So I tend to agree. I think, you know, the whole idea of the average annual value of a contract, AAV, the 10 years, $300 million, obviously, that's $30 million a year. That's probably about where Harper's going to end up. But like you say, it very well might be, you know, say 7 years and an average of $30 million a year, which, but that wouldn't be anywhere close to $400 million, sure, would it?
Well, one thing I would like to see gone is this whole opt-out idea where, you know, you think, okay, we sign a guy to a long-term contract, and then after 3 years, if he's doing well, he can just say, well, thank you, I'm opting out for more money. And it just seems like it's kind of a one-way contract where the owners, I know they're not going to have great pity for the owners, but they're tied into a deal for 7 years or 6 years or whatever, 5 years. And the player can say after two or three, hey, I'm out of here. Do you think that either one of them would take a one-year deal for big money, like some have suggested, like, okay, give them $40 million for 1 year? Do you see that as a possibility?
You know, I wouldn't discount it. I wouldn't lean toward that being probably what's going to happen, but I do think that's a possibility. I think both will end up signing multi-year deals for big, big money, not 10 years for $350 million, but like you said, maybe the 6, 7, 8 year range. But, it could be a possibility. I mean, that's what, you know, I mean, Machado and Harper both rank ahead of Josh Donaldson in terms of you know, what they've done the last few years and higher, far higher in the pecking order of free agents. You know, but Donaldson had an injury-marred year last year. He was also expected to be one of the big prizes in free agency this year. You know, largely because he missed so much time with injury, he opted, hey, I'm just going to sign a one-year kind of a make-good contract. I'll reestablish myself and then, and then we try free agency again next year. And, you know, so the Atlanta Braves snapped him up early in the winter for 1 year and $23 million. So, you know, we've seen that with Donaldson. It could happen, like you said, like a one-year $35 or $40 million deal for one of these guys. But I would still anticipate multi-years.
Sure. I mean, I think the only thing against that is Donaldson's case, he has something to prove. You know, you've got guys,
exactly.
Maybe even in Kimbrell's case, he's got something to prove because yep. He was so dreadful in the playoffs last year. But, you know, these guys, they are what they are. They don't have to prove anything to anybody. You know what you're getting with them. So Yankee fans are like puzzled. Why aren't we getting these guys? Why aren't we into it? To the insinuation, well, the Yankees are being cheap, and Steinbrenner was offended by that. Hey, we're spending $210 million. How do you call that cheap? So do you see the Yankees as being done, or do you see them pouncing maybe on somebody at the last minute?
You know, I would anticipate they're done, but, you know, I mean, I would say if they pounce, I would lean Machado over Harper. I mean, they've already got, you know, they're well stocked in the outfield, both with depth and with monster contracts. You know, Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge, and they already don't have room for it, and are trying to figure out what to do with Jacoby Ellsbury. I mean, you know, the guy that makes sense if they pounce late, obviously, is Machado. I mean, he's always wanted to play in New York and Yankee Stadium. You know, from the Yankees' perspective, obviously, it's shortstop. They've got Gregorius out till at least midseason. At third base, Miguel Andujar is a nice young player, but, you know, I mean, it's not like he's the second coming of Brooks Robinson or anything. So I think, you know, that there's room for the Yankees to pounce late, either just sign Machado and you know, if they don't trust Tulowitzki to be ready, throw Machado into the shortstop mix, or, you know, they could trade Andujar. I'm sure there'd be any number of teams out there that would say, oh, yeah, we'd be interested in Andujar, and then just make room for Machado that way. So, again, not predicting that's going to happen, but I would not discount that until Machado is signed, sealed, and delivered somewhere else. As long as he's on the open market, you know, I'd still keep my eye on the Yankees.
Yep, always be in play. Scott Miller, thank you so much for joining us.
Richard, my pleasure.